Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, here we go to Tuesday. We're live in Los Angeles. This, with a new backdrop, is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1, Sirius XM Channel 83, all of our social media platforms. 1 hour from now, my guy, my quarterback, not Russell Wilson, the next Russell Wilson, Tua Tagovailoa. I like calling him Tua for obvious reasons. We'll be joining us, Chris Collinsworth, this hour. Also, Hugh Jackson, Rick Buecher, Tua. Rick Buecher, Tua is joining us in 1 hour from now, and Joy Taylor is joining me. Joy, tomorrow, potentially, she will rejoin the show as a visual member of the show. You've only heard her voice, but they're putting a camera in her house, so tomorrow we may see Joy. Joy to the world for that, and how are you?
I'm good. Fingers crossed. We'll see. We're working through all these changes as we go. But yes, hopefully tomorrow.
We are tinkering every day. So Tom Brady yesterday released to the Players Tribune a letter. And this is what a lot of athletes do. Your Kevin Durant's, your Derek Jeter's, you know, your Tom Brady's or whoever's. You know, they retire. They do something special. And they, in their own words, take the media out of it. They write a column for the Players Tribune. And there was a couple of things that jumped out, but let me stay on one thing for Tom Brady. He goes, right now, though, I have things to prove to myself. The only way is through. If I don't go for it, I'll never know what could have happened. If I stood at the bottom of a mountain and told myself I could scale the highest peak, but then didn't do anything, what's the point of that? That is how successful people think. And let me give an example. Bill Holmes is my former accountant, lives in Portland. I moved around the country now and use somebody else, but he's a great accountant, Portland, Oregon. And he has a successful firm with a lot of successful people. And we were talking about this one time. And I never forget this. This is one of these moments somebody says something and it just sticks. You know, your dad says something to you, your mom, your brother. And it just, sometimes people say something and it just kind of lands, and for the rest of your life, it's there. You're like, you know, I'm never going to forget that. That's where sayings like a penny saved is a penny earned. Somebody smart, Aristotle or somebody, you know, comes up with that, and we think about it for the rest of our lives. So I'm not saying Bill is Aristotle or Socrates, but he said something to me once. He said, with all my successful clients, he had men, he had women, young, old, tech, you know, startups. He said, they never talk about failure. It's built in. Failure is built into success because to fail is part of business. It doesn't matter if you're Mark Cuban, Rupert Murdoch. It doesn't matter. He said losers worry about failure. Winners worry about something else. Regret. He goes, when I talk to my clients, I hear regret a lot. I regret I didn't buy this business. I regret I didn't grow faster. I regret I didn't spend more time with this person or that person. He goes, I hear regret. He goes, that's the thing that eats away at the successful, smart people I deal with. Failure is just built into life. And one of the things I've always believed about successful people, they're not always smarter. They're more aggressive. And aggressive is a really important factor in success. Number one, if you're aggressive, if you adapt quickly, if you're right, and you're not always going to be right, it's okay. But if you're right, you're going to get a lead on your industry or your field. If you adapt to the three-point shot, if you adapt to certain analytics and sports first, like the Warriors did, you jump on the rest of the league. Secondly, if you fail, and successful people don't worry about failure. They worry about regret. If you fail, you also know what doesn't work quickly, and you can move off it. Schwarzkopf. Remember General Schwarzkopf? When we got into like the Gulf War, he talked about that. He said, you can't be paralyzed by perfection. I've heard people talking about that with this virus. You can't be paralyzed with it. You've got to act. And then if you're wrong, react. But don't sit back and be passive. Go for it. Try stuff. And Tom Brady is thinking like successful people do. I'm going to go for it. I'm not going to sit at the bottom of the mountain and not climb it. Can I succeed without Belichick? Can I succeed at 43-44? Can I succeed without Belichick? Can I succeed without Dante Scarnecchia? Can I succeed in a different system? Can I succeed in the NFC from the AFC in a tougher division? Mark Cuban always says, go for it. It just takes one idea to get rich. By the way, actors do this, the great actors. Marlon Brando had 7 bombs. Who cares? Nobody talks about him. Michael Jordan bombed in D.C. Nobody cares. It didn't hurt his legacy. And for the record, if you look at the quarterbacks who have either moved on or been moved, Peyton Manning, 2 Super Bowls. Brett Favre, NFC Championship. Joe Montana, Kansas City, AFC Championship. When you still have thread left on the tires, Montana had some, Favre had some, Peyton had some, and I would say Tom is certainly healthier than Peyton, and I think he's closer to his good years than perhaps Montana. In Kansas City, Tom's better than 75% of the league right now. There's no market for Cam or Jameis Winston. Okay? There's a market for Tom. Chargers wanted him, confirmed. Raiders wanted him, confirmed. New England wanted to keep him, confirmed. And Tampa Bay got him. He's better than 75% of the guys in this league. Nobody's saying right now he's Russell Wilson. Nobody's saying he's Patrick Mahomes. On his good days, his good drives, his good series, his good halves, he is still exceptional. Today, to win a game, Jared Goff, Tom Brady, who would you take? I'd probably take Brady. I'm not saying I'd take him in a year and a half from now, but this moment, probably Tom. And I like Goff. So when I look at all these situations, what successful people do is go for it. Failure will not affect Tom's legacy. People will bang on him on social media. He doesn't care. Successful people don't. It's about regret and not living a life. Be honest about it. Be honest about it with yourself. Do you ever get content or comfortable? You ever think maybe, be honest about this. You've underachieved a little. Most of us do. We get comfortable. We get content. We get scared. I'm not going to go for it. Brady's not that kind of guy. And I think it defines his personality, defines his life. You know, there's a lot of beautiful women he could have asked out. He asked out a supermodel, the world's number one supermodel. Confident, aggressive, go for it, no regrets. So I saw this come out yesterday. Thank God the NFL is giving us content. The all-decade team came out in the NFL. And I'm not really a big guy on lists and trophies and this kind of stuff. But 2010 all-decade team. So let's just go to the quarterback. Tom Brady, yep. Aaron Rodgers, I agree. Here's what's interesting. The media influences perception. Thank God the media doesn't influence reality. Just perception, not reality. So Aaron Rodgers, a couple years ago, the GOAT, Hall of Fame first ballot, best pure quarterback talent since Elway. The perception of Aaron Rodgers is rather grandiose. The perception of Russell Wilson, Pete Carroll carried him. There's Marshawn Lynch, Legion of Boom. He's good, very talented. Nobody disputes that, but you know, he's kind of quirky. He's a little small. He's more of a runner than he is a thrower. Well, it's interesting. So let's go to the last decade, of which Russell Wilson did not play in the first 2 years. Aaron Rodgers has 1 Super Bowl win. Russell's got 2 appearances, 1 win. Playoff record, 1 guy, 10-7, Aaron. Russell's 9-6, same. Overall record, Aaron 96-45-1. Russell Wilson 86-44-1. Completion percentage, both 64. Passer rating, 101 Russell, 103 Aaron. Aaron has missed 18 starts. Russell's never missed one. So I would get Aaron Rodgers the nod over Russell Wilson. I'm not disputing that, but it's really close. One guy never misses games. Also, one guy, Aaron Rodgers, has on average had a much better O-line with more Pro Bowlers than Russell Wilson the entire decade. But now here's what's interesting. Let's just remember, perception, Aaron is boo, and Russell is quite talented. We don't talk GOAT, Hall of Fame, we don't talk. Now let's compare Aaron and Russell Wilson since Russell entered the league. only 8 of the 10 years. Aaron no longer has a Super Bowl. Russell has 2. Aaron loses his biggest statistical and touchdown year, and he still misses 16 starts. Since Russell entered the league, remember, he didn't get a sit for 3 years. He was injected with a bad O-line into the NFL. Day one, since he entered the league, he would have 2 Super Bowls, Aaron none, more rushing touchdowns, more passing yards, higher completion percentage, 0 missed starts with an inferior, on average, offensive line. Russell Wilson's a better quarterback since he entered the league than Aaron Rodgers. He's a better runner. He's a better teammate. He's worked around a worse offensive line. He's got more passing yards. He completes a higher percentage. He doesn't get coaches fired. And he never misses a start. This is not to say that Aaron Rodgers should not make the all-decade team. He should. I'd vote for him. But the perception is Aaron here and Russell several notches below. Mm-mm. Russell's been the better quarterback the last 8 years, with inferior offensive linemen protecting him. Just want to throw it out there. Thank God the media does not control reality. They simply control perception, and that has influence. I'm not disputing that. But they're not. This is not. If somebody's got an edge on the other right now in the NFL, today Russell's a better football player than Aaron Rodgers. No question. Doesn't get hurt. Works around inferior offensive lines, completions, running around, making average guys better. Does any wide receiver or tight end not work with Russell? Name it. I'm waiting for one in 8 years. They all work to some degree.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
So Adam Silver is the NBA commissioner. I like him. He is smart. He embraces gambling. He is a thinking person's commissioner. I am a big fan of Adam Silver. He said yesterday he does not expect a decision on resuming the NBA before May. Thank you. Stop predicting the end of football. Media people, it's over 5 months away. September 10th is the first day of NFL football. They'll absolutely cancel the preseason if they had to. What they don't want to cancel is the big TV network game starting September 10th. Nobody knows. Give it a rest. Another 40, 45 days, we can talk about that stuff. Adam Silver saying, I'm not sure. Let's wait. Thank you. Here's the other thing, though. It's going to take some guts to be the first people in. It's not a coincidence that Dana White says, we're going to rent an island. Go for it. Dana White is not woke. He doesn't care about Twitter. He's a tough guy. He's a maverick. Dana White, it's not a coincidence. He's one of the first guys that goes, I'm back. Because you're going to have some backbone. I mean, the NFL got crap for free agency, which I don't know, was talking on the phone. By the way, the PGA yesterday said, yeah, we're coming back. Why? A lot of old guys and rich guys. They don't care about social media. By the way, SEC football will be hyper-aggressive. They do not care about the opinion of New Yorkers and people in Los Angeles. The NFL, overwhelmingly, doesn't really care about Twitter. A little bit, it's aware of it, but they're going to do the draft, and should, they don't care what you think. They did free agency, and should, they don't care what you think. Here's what's interesting, though. NBA is the sport of social media. Social media is very kind to the NBA. It's got a younger following. Younger people are on social media. There's a lot of very funny, talented people that love the NBA, and they, you know, they do their memes and they do their little highlights, and it's very entertaining. It is the sport that the media and social media has embraced. But let's be honest about something in America. Everything's political. This is political too. There's a big chunk of people in the media, more than half, that don't like the current president and administration. You know how he's going to get reelected potentially? If we get over this quickly and the economy turns. And Joe Biden, cognitive decline, is not great at one of the debates. And Trump is, once again, 4 more years. With no concerns about reelection, he'll be even crazier, right? How is the media that has largely overwhelmingly defended Adam Silver in the NBA, the underdog league to the all-too-powerful NFL. What if Adam Silver and the NBA start the ball rolling for all the leagues and the economy turns and the imagery and the optics of it are fondly embraced by Wall Street? Back! NBA starts it all! Because you know if the NBA goes and works, and we talk about it, the ratings are going to be gigantic. And the NFL is going to be like, well, they're in. We got to go. Baseball is going to be like, they're in. We got to go. How will they treat him then? Don't kid yourself. The weather is political now. You don't think this virus is political? One channel MSNBC, gloom and doom. Fox, we're almost through it. I'm not taking sides. I'm just telling you what I'm seeing, and you're honestly seeing the same thing. It's going to be very interesting. They have curried a lot of favor with the media in America. There's nothing wrong with that. That's the NBA is the media. That's the media league. That's the social media league. But if they go back in first, kickstart the sports economy, that will kickstart the economy. It's not going to do Joe Biden any favors. We'll just tell you that right now. It'll be interesting to watch how it transpires. Because if you're denying, we live in a political world now. The weather is political. Used to be able to go up to somebody and say, man, it is hot today. And people be like, yeah. Now if you go, whew, it is hot today. Oh, global warming, right? I'm a denier. No, it's just hot today. It's 88 degrees and humid. I'm sweating. You used to be able to say that my entire life. About 8 years ago, it all changed. Weather is now political. So's the virus. So's the economy. Keep your eye on it.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Tom Brady came out with a 2,500-word essay on his time with the Patriots and moving forward to Tampa. Mentioned Bill Belichick by name once. By name once, but actually mentioned him several times in not so subtle jabs. So think about this. When we think of Belichick, Joy and I always joke, there's not a lot of warmth there. That's the word we've used. One of the first things he says is, Tampa Bay, I really appreciate the welcome and warmth I've gotten from their players and coaches. Warmth? It's an interesting word to use, right? When guys go to new teams, you never hear the word, oh, I love the warmth. Isn't that the knock on Belichick? He lacks that. Next sentence, he goes, they want to listen to what I have to say. Well, if you started dating somebody new and say, you know, I really like him. Like, he listens to what I say. Translation, the last guy didn't. So he talks about warmth in Tampa, and they listen to what I say. That's two Belichick references. Here's another one. He says, you know, for me, playing football isn't going to last another 10 years. How can I maximize what I do? So he's saying, I could assign it both places. New England can't maximize what I can do. Translation, they can't draft receivers. We don't have enough good players. Tampa's got more good players. Tom is telling you, I could have chose either. I'm going to the place that can maximize my talent. Translation, New England no longer can. Too many whiffs at wide receiver and tight end. He also then mentions him by name. He said, when the Patriots drafted me back in 2000, I was 22. I remember I'm sitting in my parents' house in San Mateo, California, growing less and less confident. The phone would never ring. But late in the draft, it did. By the way, in the sixth round, it's not like Coach Belichick himself was on the other end of the line. I think it was his assistant named Burge. The only time he mentions it, it's to note that, it wasn't like Belichick thought I was going to be great. By the way, at the very end, he also mentions Belichick without mentioning Belichick. He says, but more than any one physical place, it's the relationships I made in New England. He mentions Robert Kraft and the entire Kraft family in a sentence. It also extends to other individuals, teammates, coaches, past and present. Mostly, though, I'll miss the fans. So Kraft twice, mostly fans, teammates. The last thing he puts in is coaches. Now, I believe the reason Kevin Durant left the Golden State Warriors is you can say what you want. when Draymond Green crossed the line, is like, I'm not gonna forget that. And Golden State didn't rally around Kevin. Kevin's like, I know this is probably a better team now. I'm not gonna forget that. January of 2018, ESPN the magazine did an article on Garoppolo, Brady, the organization, all sorts of leaks. Not many appeared to come from Brady, because many were taking shots at Brady. This was the Belichick side and the Patriot side leaking stuff. Remember, stuff gets out if somebody wants it out, okay? That's the only way stuff gets out. Watergate, somebody wanted it out. Look it up. You know, so stuff started leaking for that story. And several of the quotes were, you know, coaches here believe they can win with more than Tom Brady. There's a lot of quarterbacks we could have won here with. That, to me, may not be as vulgar as what Draymond Green said to Kevin Durant. But if you worked somewhere 20 years and you took pay cuts and you were a team guy and you carried Belichick's water and you read after winning a Super Bowl against Atlanta, you read, you know, we could win with a lot of guys, knowing it was either Belichick or people on that staff. Yesterday, 2,500 words. He thanked Kraft twice, fans the most, teammates, ... then coaches. Because he may not know what coach dropped it. Coaches was the last people he thanked. I don't think it's a coincidence. Remember, this was Tom's choice. New England was, quote, shocked when he didn't sign. You look at the messaging by Tom, it's not just Belichick. That 2018 January article, several coaches on the staff. Tom doesn't know quite who leaked it, but it's probably the OC. It's probably the head coach. Somebody leaked. We can win with several quarterbacks. That's the kind of crap. I've taken a pay cut for 15 years. I've taken a pay cut for 15 years. And you could win with several of us? Okay. Yeah. Good luck on the market. Good luck with Jarrett Stidham. Good luck.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Well, you know I think he's the best quarterback in the draft. I have said I think he's Drew Brees, a left-handed Drew Brees, and I love Drew Brees. The leadership, the smarts, the accuracy, his ability to see the entire field. Nick Saban has said he's the most important recruit they've ever had at Alabama. He's 22-2 in 24 starts, 87 touchdowns, 11 picks. And I think he made Nick Saban a better coach. I think Nick did things with our next guest that Nick wasn't comfortable doing. I followed him since high school, and Tua is now joining us in the Herd. Young man, how are you? How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. Thank you. Thank you for having me today. I appreciate it.
You bet. All right, let's talk recovery. You wake up in the morning. You woke up this morning. How does your ankle feel? How do you feel? How does your hip feel?
Oh, everything feels good right now. I woke up this morning. Actually, I had visits with the team. So I had virtual visits this morning. I wasn't too worried about my health at that point.
Let me ask you: when you talk to teams, you can mention the teams if you want. You don't have to. What do you guys talk about? What do they ask you about?
Well, it's a little more in depth of getting to know you as a person, getting to know you outside of football, and then they get into a lot of plays, a lot of what you ran in college, and they'll go over some of their plays for you to sort of regurgitate to them. But there's been a variety of ways a lot of the teams have done it. But that's kind of the way they've been going.
You are a pocket passer with the ability to roll and throw. But I see you strictly as a pocket guy with very, very good feet. You know, you're obviously very athletic. Go back to high school. You could have run for a lot of touchdowns. But you always feel to me much more comfortable sitting in that pocket, reading the field, and delivering strikes. Has that been you since you grabbed a football at 8, 9, 10 years old?
Man, I just say, however the situation goes, that's just how I'm going to react to it, whether it's me needing to extend a play with my feet or with my arm. You know, I wouldn't say it's either or. It's whenever the time calls for me to get out the pocket or stay in the pocket, that's what I'll do.
Nick Saban is known as a pretty conservative coach. Go back to your freshman year. You and Nick hit it off. Why do you think he trusted you so much? He gave you more latitude. Like, did you and Nick hit it off even in your first recruiting situation?
I would say we didn't hit it off just like that. It was the relationship I had with Coach Saban was the same relationship any of the other players had on the team. You know, if you wanted to talk to him, he was more than available to talk. But other than that, I mean, he was just our coach. You know, he was just someone who we all looked up to, especially because of the success he's had throughout the course of his years at Alabama. But I would say it kicked off more so when I became the starter of the football team. I spent a lot more time with him in his office. He'd want more meetings just individually with me. And we'd go about talking, you know, things that we can do to help the team. You know, what can I say to the team? Or just things of that nature. But that's sort of when our relationship took off, was maybe my sophomore year.
Is there an offense, perhaps up-tempo, that you like to play? Now, sometimes you may go to a team, Tua, that doesn't have the personnel initially to run the offense you want. But what is the perfect offense, in your opinion, for your style?
I honestly wouldn't say I'm prone to just having one type of styled offense, because I'd say with the three offense coordinators that I had, we pretty much did everything. We went under center. We were in the gun. We ran the RPO game. We ran play pass, play action, rollout, bootleg set in the pocket. So I would say regardless, you know, it's especially with what's happening too with this whole coronavirus thing, it entails to all of us, you know, in life. It's all about learning to adapt to change. And that's pretty much the thing that I feel like I'd have to do if I enter the NFL.
Yeah, you know, I grew up with Steve Young, who was one of the great players in NFL history. He was a left-handed quarterback. I was a fan and a friend of Michael Vick, a left-hander. You know, I don't think people talk too much about it, but being a left-handed quarterback, talking to right-handed quarterbacks, and being in camps for years as perhaps the only left-handed quarterback, is that an advantage to you at all or a disadvantage? How do you look at it?
I've actually never looked at that aspect of my game. I just think it's football, whether you throw it your right hand or your left hand. Now, I understand for the receivers, there's some differences. And for the linemen, there's some differences because the backside is now the right side. The right tackle is the blind side guy. And also the rotation of the ball, how it spins for the receivers. So those are probably the two main changes that I've had to go through in my college years. But other than that, I don't really look at competition with other guys as, you know, I'm a lefty, they're a righty. I just think of it as, you know, it's just competition.
You have very rare accuracy. You have a very quick release and a very rare accuracy. Is that innate? Is it coaching? Did you have that 8-10 years ago? I mean, I just don't remember a college quarterback, and I've said this on the air several times, I don't remember a college quarterback who, whether it's a deep ball, an intermediate, a seam, a flag, it doesn't matter, a drag route. When did you really hone in and have a special level of accuracy, in your opinion?
And I would say it started from when I was very, very young. Probably at about fourth grade, fifth grade. You know, I would attest a lot of that to the hard work that my dad has instilled in me. The amount of reps, the amount of days that we've put in. I mean, there'd be days where there's no rest throughout the year. Football was year round for me and my siblings, And coaching was 24/7. Coaching was at home. Coaching was on the field. So I would attest that to my dad, my father. And then at the same time, I'd also attest a lot of that to the coaches that have helped me and shaped my game to what it is today. With the coaches that I've had all my college careers and as well as my high school career.
Tua Tagovailoa is joining us. Alabama Crimson Tide, 22-2 record, 24 starts. He's worked with my friend Trent Dilfer. By the way, give Dilfer some love here. Is there something, Trent played in the NFL for a long time. He's worked with a lot of quarterbacks. Are there little bits and pieces from Trent Dilfer, little pieces of wisdom? Because Nick Saban never quarterbacked in the NFL, so obviously Trent can offer some things that even Nick couldn't. What is Trent, little glimpses and pieces of wisdom has he offered you?
Well, I don't want to give too much of what Trent gives me, but Trent has been a huge asset for not just me, but my family as well. Throughout my college process, he's always been there. He's a phone call away, and him and my dad have been in communication for a while. So kind of with this whole draft process, when we kind of reached out to Trent to ask him, you know, if he could help us through this, I mean, he was more than welcome to. And I mean, just the thing with Trent, I would say, is he's not someone who's looking for fame, you know, and kind of all the things outside of that. Really, his thing with me is trying to help me become the best CEO I can of my brand or my company, or, you know, kind of as a person. But at the same time, learning from the mistakes that he's made in the NFL and sort of leading me in a path that I don't make those same mistakes.
Do you have a gut feeling this morning talking to all these teams? When you put your head down on the pillow at night, is there a team you think to yourself, you know, I think they like me. They talk to me today. Do you have a feeling where you're going to go?
I don't. I don't. That's the scary thing. I'm not too sure where I'll be living next year.
Yeah.
At about this time, because all the teams that I've talked to, they've all been really, really good. So it's tough to tell.
When I was a kid, I remember getting into I had a little motor scooter, and I got into a wreck, and it ripped up. I got hurt. And I remember my dad saying, you got to get right back on the bike. Because if you don't, if you don't get back on it after you're hurt, you'll be afraid to get on it. And you've had some injuries. How do you avoid, how do you avoid not thinking about those when you're on the field? Get right back on the bike, play, not thinking about injuries. How do you do that mentally?
Well, I think first off, the support that I've had from my family has been outstanding. The support that I've had from a lot of the fans have been outstanding. But aside from all of that, I mean, in the moment, you don't think too much. It's just something that happens. You know, you're playing football. It's not. You're not playing badminton or tennis, you know, where it's a non-contact sport. So you got to understand that you're going to be taking some hits. You're going to be nicked up, and I believe everyone gets hurt playing the game. Whether it's small injuries, big injuries, a lot of the small things end up occurring to be big things, but. I mean, it's not something I think of too much.
Yeah. Now, are you how much can you work out now? Are you doing some workouts because all this social distancing stuff? Or are you just doing personal stuff, weight room stuff, sprinting stuff? What can you do right now?
Yeah, I've actually just been doing a lot of weight room things, kind of still keeping up with my rehab, and then just going out to the park and just tossing the ball around here and there.
Yeah. Well, you were an absolute credit to Alabama. I think Nick Saban used you brilliantly, and that doesn't surprise me. I'm so happy that you guys are working together, you and Trent. I'm rooting for you. I think you're a very unique, rare talent, like very few I've ever seen. I've never compared another quarterback to Drew Brees, and that's obviously pressure you can certainly handle. But you're a good young man, and I appreciate you coming on our show today, too. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you guys for the opportunity. Thank you, Colin. Appreciate it.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Many of you do not like Jim Harbaugh because of his personality and because he makes a lot of money and blah, 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 blah. I am a data-based, fact-based show. I'm not interested in your opinion. Should be very interesting to note, however, that Las Vegas and Fox Bet and multiple casinos have Michigan at 9 wins, but that's not the story. The story is that Michigan State is now at 4.5 wins projected over under win total. That means Vegas says that's the median, that's the number I would take with Michigan State, the over, not much. Stanford's also now at 5.5. Isn't that interesting? So when Jim Harbaugh arrived at Michigan, the rival Michigan State was averaging 10.6 wins. The years before he got there, from 2010 to 2014, they were now second best program in the conference to Ohio State, 10.6 wins. You know what they've averaged the last four facing Harbaugh in recruiting? 6.8. Crushed the rival in state. Stanford was a power with Harbaugh, beating Pete Carroll and USC. They're over under total now, last couple of years, 5.5. By the way, the 49ers failed in their first two attempts to replace Harbaugh before they found Kyle Shanahan. Seeing a trend here? Well, Colin, Michigan hasn't won a national title. They don't, because there's five football powers right now in America, and they do not qualify as that. Alabama, Ohio State, Oklahoma, Clemson, and I would put in Georgia. I would not put in LSU because they, before Joe Burrow and the coach Brady got there, they were struggling, and they may struggle after. I don't think they'll be nearly as good this year. But there's five powerhouse programs of the 120 in the country. They're not that. I do believe they fall into the next group, LSU, Notre Dame, Wisconsin, Michigan, Penn State. Very good football teams, 9-10 wins, playing major bowls. But Michigan historically has never been Alabama and Ohio State at its best, or Clemson. It is a 9-10 win program, academically tougher in a state without a bunch of players. They have to go to warm weather cities and convince kids to come in. Michigan's never been a great high school football state. Ohio is, Alabama is, the Carolinas can be, Los Angeles, Houston, Atlanta, Dallas can be. Not Michigan, so he has to go out of the state and get players. But if you start looking at the historic trends of Michigan, at their best, right, coach, they win 9 games. Harbaugh, I take the over this year, favored to win 9 games. So he's right. And for, by the way, Michigan was winning 6 games the previous 3 years before Harbaugh. He's added 30% wins. So eat that. All you Michigan State rival in the tank. Stanford now, not very good, even in the Pac-12. 49ers took two coaches to replace them. Michigan's winning their historic number 9. And oh, by the way, they were winning 6 before he got there. You like produce? How do you like them apples? In your face. I love winning arguments. It's so fun.